Please.
Okay, I just turned us on. I'm on my way back to my desk.
Okay, Congresswoman.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to call the Commerce, Gaming, and Land Committee meeting to order. Today is January 13th, 2021. The time is 1:01 p.m. Roll call, please.
Congresswoman Shaw.
Present.
Congressman Keane.
Present.
Congresswoman Lemon.
Present.
Congresswoman Revard.
Present.
Congresswoman Stabler. Congresswoman Goodfox.
Present. The next item on our agenda is prayer. Congresswoman Revard, will you render an afternoon prayer for us, please?
Yes, thank you, Congresswoman Goodfox. Everybody would just bow your heads. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen.
Thank you. The next item on our agenda is approval of minutes. Chair, I'll entertain any motions for the approval of minutes. They're from December 1st.
Okay.
Is there a second?
Second.
I'll second.
Motion on the floor with a second. All those in favor signify by saying yes.
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 No opposed, motion carries. Thank you. The next item on our agenda is Skyway 36 Technology Hub discussion with Peter Shannon. Assistant Principal Chief, have you gotten on the line yet? Assistant Principal Chief, are you on the line?
Chair, this is the clerk.
Yes.
I only have one unidentified caller on the line. I have one individual that's waiting to load. They've just loaded. Their name is Paul. I'm not sure who that is, but Peter Shannon is on the line as well, but I do not see Assistant Principal Chief.
I see him now. Can you hear us? Assistant Principal Chief? All right, well, thank you. We're at item number 5 on the agenda, Skyway 36 Technology Hub discussion, and I'm going to give the floor to you for some introductions and to open up on this subject matter.
Well, thank you, everyone, for having us at your meeting today. Excuse me. We're in the executive conference room with Peter Shannon, myself, Paul Cuddy, Mark Kirk, and we met Peter as a result of a meeting requested by Brian Forsenberg. He's the
executive director of the Tulsa Chamber of Commerce.
Okay. So, and several other state officials down in Skyway, we invited Peter back today to hopefully visit with the Commerce Committee and also to take a brief tour of the ranch today and swing back by Hominy on his way back to Tulsa. He's in Oklahoma again this week. And without further ado, I'll let Peter introduce himself and tell you about himself and talk about some of the things that we've talked about Skyway's contention. Peter?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And hi, everybody. My name is Peter Shannon, and really enjoy the opportunity to have this conversation. I'd like to use it in a way that, you know, best answers your questions. And please, let's treat this as an open conversation. You know, speak up at any time, and let's just make the most out of this discussion. So I do have a few slides that I can put on screen, if that makes sense. I'm just going to figure out how to do that exactly. Let's see. Do you know how to share a screen using GoToMeeting?
I'm not a good
Zoom person. Yeah, I'm a Zoom person, and so I'm
yes.
Not super familiar.
The options
there.
There should be on the bottom menu where it pops up
with the volume of the video. Yes, okay. You know, I'm going to have to restart GoToMeeting to apply these changes. That's not going to work. I'm going to have to disconnect and reconnect.
I have, Chair, this is the clerk.
Yes.
I have given Mr. Shannon presenter capabilities. He should be able to share his screen on his computer, and it should share with everyone.
Okay.
So at the bottom of your screen, you should have a screen, and it has a line through it. If you click on that, you should be able to share your screen with them.
Okay, thank you. So I'm clicking on that screen icon, and I'm getting a dialog box that says GoToMeeting needs to use accessibility features. So this is a configuration issue on my machine.
Okay.
Not being a GoToMeeting user, this is my first time using it.
Would you have to do that? Do you stop that? And then we can have the Obi-Wan
here. Yeah. I think that's fine. Okay. I think that's fine.
You could also send those slides to me, and I could put them on on my screen if you would like to do that.
The file is 150 megabytes. So.
Never mind.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got my microphone unmuted here, so if you'd like to, so we can continue the conversation.
Okay. Okay. Hello?
Yes.
Hello. This is Byron Big Horse. Sorry I'm late.
It's muted.
It was.
No, it's fine.
We'll be ready.
Well, Assistant, do you wanna start with any opening remarks?
See, she's Dan Macintosh's friend. Yeah. Well, we could just talk from the phone. We're going to have to do that.
Right.
There's no one to talk about.
Okay. Are you able to see the title screen of my presentation now, everybody? Okay, super. As the slide would indicate, the name of the firm that I've started is Radius Capital, and we are early stage investors in the innovation behind advanced aerial mobility. A little bit of background about myself. I've been in the venture business for over 15 years. My education is as an engineer in systems engineering and computer science. So a lot of applied math in my background, a lot of software engineering, and some of my first experiences in that space were with startups, one of which I co-founded out of my undergraduate work researching computer-based gaze tracking. So teaching a computer to track human eye movements in real time to enable new possibilities with how people interact with software and with machines. That was a really formative experience for me because it taught me the potential of how software and new technology can create business opportunity. And that really ended up setting the course for my career. I remained in very technical roles in software architecture for 6 or 7 years after undergraduate, and then went to University of Chicago for my MBA. Coming out of that program, joined a venture capital firm headquartered in Boston called Atlas Venture. Atlas, at the time, managed about $2.1 billion across 7 funds. And they had, you know, 4 offices around the world, 16 partners. You can just imagine a place with tremendous resources for someone young wanting to come into the business and learn from really experienced people. And so at Atlas, I spent 5 years and kind of got that classical training in venture capital investing and in recognizing the patterns that show you where promising startup opportunities exist, and learning about the path that each of these companies goes down in its progression from an idea to a marketable product to a company that can be cash flow positive. And each one of those journeys are, uniquely, distinct, difficult. They have their own challenges, but across them, there are, you know, many patterns that emerge. And while I was at Atlas, I was encouraged to find, certain domain areas to focus on to build up complementary expertise that would balance out across our entire investment team. And for me at that time, it was work in technologies around sustainability, around clean technology to include renewable energy, energy efficiency, biofuels, and also transportation and mobility, in particular electric propulsion. And during that work, over the years following, focusing in this area, began to recognize that the most profound opportunities were in transportation mobility, where software can play a huge role in the innovations that are brought forward, where you are not bringing products to market, such as in renewable energy, where you are competing essentially to produce a commodity, kilowatt hour of electricity, different technological approaches to get to the same point. But rather in mobility, you have so many different dimensions of value that you can create. You can create new networks, new modes of transportation, new business models for how people access transportation services versus buying and owning the assets. And we see the impact of technology in electric propulsion and in automation as driving that. And those technology drivers have inherent scalability, which makes them very attractive as startup investments. And so this is really where my focus coalesced. And in the last 3 years, we saw that these same technologies that had us so excited about what was going on in ground transportation were about to have a really profound effect on flight. And it was that realization in 2017 that led me to create Radius Capital and focus an entire investment strategy on the enabling technologies and the opportunities that are created by this trend. I was the first financial-oriented venture investor with an exclusive focus in this space. And through that first mover advantage and a lot of focused pioneering hard work in terms of thinking through the implications of this space and building the relationships across the people in the public sector as well as the aerospace industry that are relevant to this effort, have turned that into a really great platform and a viewpoint for where this innovation is going to play out over the coming years and where the key technologies and opportunities sit in the space. I have one partner that I've brought on board about a year ago in this space. He was a former fighter pilot after he went to the U.S. Air Force Academy as an exchange student from Croatia, flew in the Croatian Air Force as a fighter pilot for 9 years, and then came to the U.S. for his MBA. And worked for Airbus Ventures, working in these aerospace innovations and also automotive-oriented technologies, and then joined me last year and has been a great addition to the team that we've been building. And what we focus on are really this insight that transportation drives so many aspects of modern society, of the places where we choose to live, where we choose to work, and how we carve out the regular daily movement patterns that make up the set of economic opportunities, the set of social interactions that we have. So many of these things, as they have throughout history, are governed by the capabilities of our transportation technology and the networks that we have. And what we see right now is that these technologies are driving massive change with huge implications for those ends. And this change is coming in the form of new materials for manufacturing, new propulsion systems, new sensing systems, new geospatial data, and of course, the continued progression of sensors and artificial intelligence that are allowing us to pull this data together and create transportation systems that operate at a level of complexity and automation that exceed the capabilities of human operators. And of course, human operators sit throughout our modern transportation networks. But as we look ahead, we're going to see the capabilities of these networks expand on the back of the automation. Mm-hmm. And it's a very interesting space to be watching right now. And what we really have come to understand is that this technology, as applied to aerial mobility, really is the first place where this whole stack of technologies is going to mature, is going to actually commercialize. And in fact, these technologies are then going to find their way into ground transportation and be applied more broadly across the economy. But doing this in the aerial environment is actually it being a much more consistent, rules-driven, and structured environment in the air. It actually makes it quite a lot easier to go and stand up these systems, exercise them in real operations, and see the systems mature, see people build up the experience through operations and know-how to go and scale them. And of course, with that comes greater access to capital and companies with the resources to go and do the next larger scale, more complex things ahead as we move to those generalized capabilities. We aren't the only ones who recognize this. This is going on across multiple industries right now. And I think the very interesting thing is that as these new technologies are adopted by aerospace, they are drawing companies that are not traditional aerospace participants in. One of numerous examples is Toyota's commitment to this space, both in directly investing in aerial mobility, but also in this $800 million fund that they've launched to build the software stack that ties all kinds of sensors and robotic systems, be they drones, be they autonomous vehicles and other things, together and create a data network and an operating system upon which more innovations can be created. Toyota is actually one of the investors committed to investing in our fund. And so we stay very close to this and are working alongside this group. Of course, Toyota has invested in an urban air mobility company, and they aren't the only one. Hyundai Motors has made a $1.4 billion commitment to urban air mobility, and Fiat Chrysler came public with an announcement that they're working with another urban air mobility startup called Archer on a similar type of program. And so we see companies from really across the space now looking at this and recognizing what we see as well, the opportunity that's ahead. What we've done with Radius Mobility is we've positioned ourselves as thought leaders in the space, and we do that through straddling both deep involvement in the startup sector, but also a big investment in our relationships with NASA, with FAA, with Department of Defense, and the public sector stakeholders who are given the task of figuring out the roadmap by which we create this system of systems, figuring out the roadmap for the regulations that enable us to do these more advanced type flight operations in the airspace system. And in order for them to pull that off, it really requires a lot of cross-disciplinary collaboration with the private sector. And we have tried to be one of those bridges. And one of the things that I worked on in 2019 and that we published in early 2020 was a national strategy for advanced air mobility that I did through the National Academies of Sciences. And that's available. That's something that I've shared with the group here. And that is, one of these examples of how we're participating in the space. I also sit on an advisory board to NASA Aeronautics. This advisory board is composed of other executives and thought leaders from across the aerospace industry. And our job for the last 2 years has been to advise NASA on their strategy for how to enable U.S. industrial leadership in this next chapter of aerospace. And we meet about every quarter and provide NASA with feedback on the various programs that they have in this area. NASA is currently spending about $135 million a year on this effort right now. And so it's a very big emphasis within their aeronautics mission directory. We also have our own advisory board from across the aerospace, the automotive industry, touching on areas of propulsion, touching on areas of the data and the systems, and then also getting leading minds from the policy side around the laws that are going to be enabling automated flight and going to be enabling larger and larger transportation networks based on this technology. We have a technical advisory board as well that brings in technical expertise from various sectors that are of relevance. And these span propulsion, they span aeromechanics, they span the data and airspace considerations, the needs of the defense community, the infrastructure that is going to be important that as we consider the build out of transportation networks on the back of this, and also the expertise needed for taking prototypes through flight test and into certification and all the way through. And we're really privileged to have these people investing their time with us and being part of this mission to create all of these connections across the industry and try and lay out a roadmap for the innovation in a way that makes sense and in a way that takes what is a 30-year vision and starts to figure out, hey, what do the first 5 years of this actually need to look like? And what are the things that we need to be thinking about today if we want to be in the air with a certain type of vehicle flying a certain type of mission 3 years from now? And we really are positioned to answer those questions with clarity. That has been a key success factor for us because as investors, if we're deploying capital, well, we better know what we're investing in and what the expectations are. And this is how we do that. This is just a slide cover something I already mentioned, our work authoring the national strategy for aerial mobility and laying out a case for why this technology is squarely in the national interest. And it is, from an economic standpoint, from a societal standpoint, and equally importantly from a national defense, national security standpoint, because as our base infrastructure that supports society, including transportation, becomes more and more embedded with technology, we have seen examples throughout recent history of how important it is that we have control and domain over that technology because of the vulnerability that it presents if otherwise. And so our leadership in this area of transportation, it's essential. And we make that case and we lay out a roadmap for how we get there. We also, we track hundreds of startups. We track the partnerships that the startups have with each other. We track where each startup sits in terms of its strengths and its weaknesses. And we track the people across this industry. So we know on a given topic, who are the people that have that expertise, be it in any technical discipline across this. We know where to go. We know who to connect. We know how to help people move forward with this. I spoke a little bit about the big picture, you know, really framing this in a big way. And this slide really tries to encapsulate this. So let's walk through it. The advanced aerial mobility is really the entire body of innovation that is represented by three technology drivers. One is electrification of propulsion. Two is autonomous systems. And then the third driver is connectedness. So this is networked data that enables things to be put together, enables vehicles and infrastructure to talk to each other. These technologies are leading us to new capabilities in aviation that are distinct from what we have in aviation based upon 20th century technologies. Electric propulsion reduces the complexity of air vehicles. It reduces the noise. These systems have redundancy. They have increased safety if they're designed the right way. They are capable of vertical flight in ways that would just not be feasible. And we explored this in the 1960s extensively. Vertical takeoff and landing aircraft based upon tilt rotor configurations, based upon separate lift and thrust, with electric propulsion and with the advanced control systems that we now have the capability to deliver, vertical flight becomes a real possibility. And in fact, quiet economic vertical flight becomes a real possibility. And then, of course, we have reduced costs. And when we look at the whole picture of this, this innovation and these capabilities are manifesting not just in drones or not just in urban air taxis, but really a whole spectrum of new vehicle platforms. And they range from small aircraft that, you know, are in the drone family to air taxis that are that might be fixed wing or they might be vertical takeoff and landing, up to large size aircraft. And we see two companies over in Europe that are looking at regional transport aircraft that are battery electric and hybrid electric, and they are part of this technology movement as well. And all of this work, all of these new capabilities expressed in these new flying platforms, it's the most exciting time in the aerospace industry since the 1930s. And it is leading to this proliferation of applications of flight that go beyond the sort of what is dominated today in the airspace system by commercial air traffic, to a whole set of new applications, whether you're moving goods, whether you're delivering a package last mile, or you're moving inventory in internal in a company's supply chain, or whether you're moving bulk cargo, whether you're moving corporate executives between facilities, or whether you're offering a public-facing air taxi service, whether you're doing inspection of wind turbines, or you are gathering geospatial data across multiple spectra domains and for entirely new applications. This technology is a platform that makes all of those things now possible and allows entrepreneurs with the creative mind to take this new technology and apply it in ways that, that we haven't yet anticipated. And our work as investors is around the investment in those core enabling technologies that are driving the early days of this. But through all of our work and through all of the network that we've built, we are front and center for those creative entrepreneurs who are thinking about applying this in new ways. And that is, you know, equally in our domain for the places where we are going to be deploying capital and where we're going to be working with startups. This slide talks a little bit about the areas where we do play, principally on enabling technologies, and be it in autonomy, be it in the supply chain for vehicles, or be it in how we scale up manufacturing of aerospace-grade systems and components to the very high volumes that will be demanded by some of these new markets. You notice I faded out the building vehicles. We are not trying to pick the winning horse amongst the different vehicle startups because we don't need to. We can get better risk versus return looking at the enabling technologies and then these areas on the right in operations and in applications, digitizing the flight environment, new software for air traffic management, new data sources for weather and for safe assured flight routing, cybersecurity and data connectivity, on and on. We are investing in the picks and shovels that all of the prospectors going out to build a new vehicle need in order to go and pursue what they're going after. And the investments that we're making are applicable to really all of the different forms of flight that are being developed. So we're able to capture that inevitability without having to bet on one winning horse versus another. And we also are able to invest, therefore, in companies that have inherent scalability, which, as I mentioned earlier in my talk, the power of software as your innovation tool set, you know, cannot be overstated. It is an absolutely incredible mechanism. It's an incredible place for early stage capital to be invested. And that really is where we go and play. So when we look across this whole community of innovators that are pursuing all of these different areas, one of the things that we have come to see is that a lot of these companies are forced to figure out, well, okay, what is my set of service providers going to be? What will my supply chain be? Who is going to do my prototyping of my first air vehicle or my first system components? And where am I going to go and do flight test? Where am I going to go and find the workforce that I need? Where should I locate this company? And we started spending time in Oklahoma through a relationship that NASA introduced us to the Choctaws in 2017. And we began coming to the state and doing work around the test range that they have been developing and thinking about the resources that are already here in Oklahoma. And we began to recognize the potential for this state to be an answer to that question that these startups face. And we see an opportunity to take the resources that are already here, the skilled workforce, the existing supply chain, all of these criteria that we lay out on the slide, and with a purposeful industrial development strategy to create leadership in advanced aerial mobility, we believe that Oklahoma can easily become such a clear, logical choice as a place to come and do rapid development, to be very efficient with capital, to be able to move quickly in terms of timelines, and to be able to access the service providers and the supply chain that these companies need, and to have that supply chain relatively local to the business, to turn this into a place that becomes a low-risk choice for startups that want to do this type of development. And in turn, that, of course, brings a lot of technology companies into Oklahoma. The technologies that we're talking about are technologies that sit at the very frontier across the entire technology domain. And it puts the state really on the map in terms of one of the new clusters that we'll be developing as we see in other parts of the country where new technology clusters are forming as companies move out of the legacy clusters, such as Silicon Valley, such as Boston and the New York area. There is a wholesale shift going on, especially in this last year for obvious reasons, that people are waking up to the possibilities. And this place, certainly for autonomy and aerial mobility and aviation-oriented technologies, it has so many things going for it. So we are very much on top of that, and we are working with the state at the legislature level, at the State Department of Commerce level, and with a couple of tribes on what that plan needs to look like. What are the building blocks that we should be putting in place? Where should we be deploying capital? What type of incentives should we be providing? And of course, Radius has a list of dozens of startups that would be the first ones, the choice startups to go and approach to bring into the state. And also the choice service providers in prototyping or in carbon composite manufacturing that would be sensible investments to make to bring into the state, to turn it into that very desirable rapid development environment for innovation. And we are building this plan out. We are talking to people throughout the state about how we go and do this and how we mobilize Oklahoma aligned capital to complement the public sector incentives that are already being offered to these companies, to complement that with direct equity investment from platforms such as ours. We see this as a way to both catalyze the influx of partner interest, as well as to bring more capital to bear and to bring more innovation into the state, and to really create a self-reinforcing cycle of leadership in advanced aerial mobility that sets Oklahoma up for really a structural advantage in this space going forward. And that can be a long-term competitive advantage that brings a lot. And of course, we've been working with the Choctaw on this, and I've started with the Chickasaws in the last year as well on this type of a plan, and talking about the benefits that it can create for the whole state. I don't want to go into too much detail given limited time, but our goals are really around creating jobs, creating high quality career opportunities in the state, and building wealth. Because we recognize that the greatest opportunity in this space is if you are close to the startups and you see them executing, and you see them at your test range, for instance, the biggest opportunity is to use that knowledge and that thought leadership that you gather to know which assets you want to own long term. That is what this is about. And in the long term, the assets that we might end up wanting to own are vertiport infrastructure, drone delivery network, ground infrastructure. We might want to own maintenance facilities for all of these vehicles in the future, and MRO is a very established industry in the state. We might want to own financing platforms that do the vehicle acquisition and leaseback for these types of models, or we might want to play a role in the insurance industry for these fleets and for how they are underwritten and how the networks work. These are all the types of industrial pillars that we can, through work with the innovators, through the early insights that generates, can lead us to the relationships and to the insights that help us know which ones we want to be invested in and how we build pillars of this next chapter of the aerospace industry right here in the state. So are there any questions at this point?
Committee, does anyone have any questions?
Okay, well, I'll talk a little bit about what this can look like. On the one hand, there are some foundations that we want to put in place. One of those foundations are test ranges such as the one that you're building, test ranges such as what the Choctaw have been building. Another piece of the foundation that we think is important is flight test engineering expertise. That type of capability is the hard-won knowledge of how to take a new aircraft prototype and design a multi-phase, multi-month flight test protocol and program for that aircraft to first do development flight testing, and then with an aircraft that's fully characterized in terms of how it flies, to then also design flight tests for how to most efficiently employ it in whatever given application one has desired. I'm an advisor to a company called Mojave Aero Group, which is one of the leading flight test and training organizations in the country and have been advising a group here in Oklahoma on a strategic investment in that company to bring them here to the state and establish a permanent presence with those folks here to be a complement to the Test Range assets. One of the people on my advisory board was president of Scaled Composites for 16 years. And he is considering right now starting essentially Scaled Composites 2.0. And I've been working with him on that. And the idea in my mind is that he would do well to locate that company here in Oklahoma. That company would do what Scaled did so well in the 1980s when it was that scrappy entrepreneurial organization, which is take very advanced concepts that haven't been tried before, design them, do rapid prototyping, and then work hand in hand with groups like Mojave Aero Group to do the flight test and characterization, and to offer that as one of the value-added services that the startup community in this state can access so that they can move quickly with their idea. So for instance, you know, a startup that is creating an automated electric aircraft for crop dusting, do they have to go reinvent the wheel in terms of how to do prototyping, in terms of how to figure out who their supply chain should be, where they should go for electric motor controllers and the propulsion systems and the rotor blades? Or are there service providers that are local, that are part of the cluster, that can just very quickly guide them through that decision tree and can very quickly allow them to focus on automated flight for crop dusting, which is the purpose of the startup? That's what the startup wants to do. That's what the capital investors in that startup want, is a way to move rapidly. And having companies like a Scaled Composites 2.0 that are local in the cluster is a huge strategic advantage. And so when we talk about foundations and putting the building blocks in the state and leveraging the supply chain that already exists in the state, these are examples of what we mean. We also think a lot about further development of the supply chain, bringing more of these vehicle manufacturers when they get to a later stage in their progression, attracting them to the state. The state is already courted by aerospace. That is a deal that's in, you know, the late stages. But there are a couple of dozen other vehicle manufacturing companies that are at various levels of progress that have taken on various amounts of capital and that are, you know, considering where their long-term future is going to be. Just as Tesla moved out of California and shopped around and ended up in Austin, many of these companies that are currently in California are feeling the same way and are, making very serious considerations as to where their future is going to be located. And with that, you can build up more and more of a skilled workforce. You can build out a supply chain. And this is where the state and all of us who are stakeholders in this can start to see structural competitive advantage put in place, and where this place can develop a gravity of its own that attracts more and more business and more innovation. And then the last column in this plan is the services that will undergird long-term the transportation networks that get built on the back of this technology. And I spoke a little bit about those, be it support for logistics networks, be it owning and operating networks of ground infrastructure that serve these vehicles. And that those networks of ground infrastructure could be all over North America, but there could be Oklahoma-based companies that get started in it now because they're part of this community, they're part of this cluster that we build out. And then it can be the various sides of finance that support all of this as well. And shouldn't forget maintenance, repair, and overhaul, because that is already such a core piece of this state's economy that has its own transformation to go through to serve fleets of drones, to serve electric aircraft. But it stands to see a huge amount of growth because of the number of vehicles that will be put into use. So I'll conclude there. This gives you a pretty good picture of who we are, the trend that we're focused on, how Radius Capital is approaching it, how we found our way to Oklahoma, and why we think it is such a win-win to be operating in this state. Really the ways that we can see to complement public sector incentives to go and build this by coming in and sharing our thinking on an industrial development plan and sharing our thinking on how we can bring Oklahoma-aligned private capital to bear in this same effort alongside everybody, because it's a win for everybody.
Thank you, Mr. Shannon. I'll open up any questions that the committee has, or anyone on Congress that's not on the committee.
Madam Chair.
Does anyone have any questions?
Madam Chair.
Congressman Potts, is that you?
Ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Shannon, thank you for being with us today. One of my quick questions is, what specifically attracted you to Skyway? What's that competitive advantage that we may have over Chickasaw or Choctaw? Because I know quite a bit about this from previous discussions, but I would just kind of like to hear from you. Why Skyway?
Proximity to Tulsa. Yeah, it's proximity to a major city and the logistics in and out. Yet still having the same scale of remote access, test range facilities, but the logistics in and out, the base of talent that is within proximity. I think that's an important differentiator. In all, though, I really don't see different test ranges as competing with each other. The other test ranges are the least of the things that you need to worry about. Really the talent and the skill sets that are brought into the area and the development of the state industry as a whole is really the prize that we need to have our eye on. But to directly answer your question, it is transportation logistics in and out, proximity to Tulsa, that's the difference.
So,
anyone else?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Madam Chair, just as a follow-up, Mr. Shannon, what are some of those partnerships that we've got in place that maybe you can highlight real quick that maybe caught your attention, or that we can further or deepen in the next couple of months to help facilitate some growth?
Well, I think that the areas of partnering that are probably the most instrumental are going to be in the things that make the facility most attractive to the people that are considering coming and testing there now. And so that can be support for flight operations. It can be partnerships around telemetry and range and instrumentation. And it can be partnerships around the value-added test engineering and flight test skill sets that are, in our mind, a very important overlay to the physical test range infrastructure itself. And then I think the other area is in things related to the next steps that these startups go through, which is establishment of supply chain, establishment of service providers, contract manufacturing for low rate production of whatever system that it is that they're working on, and clarity on a pathway for how they move from outsourced engineering services, low rate production, to higher scale, and how they do that in a way that they maintain control of their intellectual property, and really play that balancing game between moving quickly, being capital efficient through outsourcing, but then also preserving enough of the long-term value and enough of the control of their own destiny for how they step up and grow into a bigger self-sustaining company. And really, as you unpack that evolution, there's a whole sort of tree of questions that lie underneath that for every one of these companies. And to the extent that you can form the partnerships that help simplify that set of questions and help make that journey a bit more predictable for each of these companies, then not only are you serving their tactical needs, but you are really helping them think ahead, because you're already putting in place structures, pathways that are 18 to 36 months ahead of where their day-to-day, week-to-week focus is. And that can be, I think, a very empowering part of your pitch and of your message.
Madam Chair.
Assistant Principal Chief.
Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay. Just a follow-up clarification question for Peter, based on Congressman Pott's prior question. His first answer was, he had about four items on it, but I'm going to ask Mr. Shannon, those items that you mentioned, is that at base an air traffic management system for Skyway? Would that be one of the things that I'm just wondering if I heard you correctly?
It could be an air traffic management system. It could be low altitude surveillance coverage for the entire range. It could be reliable installed high bandwidth data links for the aircraft. It could be something even as simple as, a control room with the ability to, locate different band antennas and for people to bring their own. But if you can solve for those things right out of the box, then you've helped these companies out. If you have, some level of capability of rapid prototyping, fabrication, additive manufacturing, a machine shop, electronics troubleshooting type facilities on site, well, that's going to be another, box that you can check that will... It just means the startups have to bring less of this with them themselves. When you go and talk with a bigger aerospace company that, they're out flight testing helicopters and they're, on a certification path to go and do that, and they go out to very remote areas in order to go and do that, depending upon the type of air vehicle and how much space they need. They are budgeting $25,000 a day to just be on site with their people to do that flight testing. And they bring trailers of equipment, not just for the creature comforts, but trailers of equipment for maintaining the air vehicle and for keeping it in the air, for data capture, for troubleshooting, for really all of the different contingencies that they know they might encounter when they're out in the middle of nowhere trying to make progress on this test plan. And if you can, adopt that mindset and then solve for that so that these startups that aren't as well resourced, that aren't working on, a several hundred million dollar helicopter development budget, but are rather trying to build a crop spraying drone. If you can allow them to have the same sort of de-risked pathway, the same likelihood of success without having to, provision and plan for all of those contingencies themselves, then that's going to be great for them.
Excellent.
It's going to be attractive.
Thank you.
Chair Good Fox.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair Good Fox. Thank you, Mr. Shannon, for being here with us today. And I understand you went and visited the Osage Nation Ranch today. And I was just curious, how would that play into the vision that you have?
So the ranch I will be visiting after this call.
Oh, okay. I thought you had already been out there and visited that. So, it's 43,000 acres, and I'm sure you've got a description of that, and you're going out there for a reason. Could you share with us maybe what you're thinking about the possibilities with the ranch would be?
Yeah, certainly. So the ranch can serve really two categories of flight tests. It can serve for developmental flight test, which is to explore the flight characteristics of a new prototype vehicle that someone is building, and to understand, do its flight characteristics, do its flight characteristics meet the requirements for FAA certification in the instances where certification applies and is required? And then the other category of flight test is operational flight tests. And I think this is the one that we all need to give a lot of attention to, because operational flight test takes a vehicle that has already been through developmental flight test. We already know how it flies and what the performance envelope is. But in operational flight test, we're answering the question for a given application. Let's say we want to do last mile delivery of packages. For that application, how would an operator most efficiently employ this vehicle in order to achieve that mission, in order to build that type of a network? And in that case, you are out there on a test range, essentially setting up physical simulations of these different operations, and you are running them under different environmental conditions, different simulated weather, different simulated transportation network loads, volumes. You are figuring out what does the operational tempo need to be, what are the procedures, and what are the metrics that you collect off of that to understand how efficiently you can run this network. As you can imagine, operational flight testing is very involved. It consumes a lot of resources, a lot of time, but it's very important. And when you multiply that across this expansive set of new applications that people want to go and explore with these new flight capabilities, the demand for operational flight testing is going to be huge. It is going to be bigger than what we have seen in recent decades in aviation, because there are so many new things that people want to explore, so many new models that people want to explore with these new types of aircraft. And that's one of the reasons why I think that, the state is going to be in a great position if it has more than a handful of these types of big flight test range.
Okay, thank you.
Any other member of Congress?
I think that the state is going to be in a great position if we have multiple of these test ranges available. And so I think that what is being contemplated at this ranch and what the Choctaw have been working on, that's great. And we need more beyond that in terms of that capacity as we look ahead, in my view.
Madam Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So to continue on that, Mr. Shannon, I get that the nation is attracted for some of these operational funds. I'm not sure. Airspace. All these things are great. What does this body need to do to formalize or to facilitate these partnerships? And what is kind of our next step from this body and, say, the executive branch, and how we start to formalize these relationships and partnerships? How do you see that taking place?
How do I see the next steps for the OSAGE and how to formulate the partnerships? That's a question that I can't entirely answer yet. I'm still coming up to speed on the group and the progress to date, and the 1 and 2 year milestones for it. But certainly, Radius is one avenue at your disposal for accessing those partnerships, accessing all of the companies that we see in our deal flow and that we screen, and then the ones that, the select few that we end up putting up in our putting into our portfolio. That certainly is one avenue through which introductions to those partnerships can be made, and you can move forward. I know that the state of Oklahoma also, through their economic development group, they've put a real emphasis on aerospace and on bringing these types of companies into the state. For instance, they've been working with Bi Aerospace for what I understand, over the last 6 months with an incentive package to bring them into the state. And they may well end up in Tulsa, actually. There are, you know, a couple of locations in the state that the company is still considering. So that can be another additional avenue. I think that these types of partnerships are important. I think that getting in front of the right companies and knowing which companies are the most promising to be spending time with in the first place is really important if you want to use your time and your resources efficiently. Because, you know, this is a very crowded space, and it's helpful to have, you know, an informed view as to who is worth making an offer to, who is worth investing your time with in the first place. And so resources like us and like those groups are ones that can certainly be helpful.
Chair, this is Jody.
Second speaker, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So I guess Assistant Chief, you might be able to answer this for me. I was just wondering, so what we're really talking about is this company using our space down at the air park. Is that correct?
Well, I think that it's a little more of a broad opportunity than that. From executives' perspective, we're in our third or fourth hour of conversation here. When Mr. Shannon said he could come back and take a look at the ranch, I wanted him to speak to the Congress. So we're still in the getting acquainted phase, and we're trying to familiarize Mr. Shannon with all of our assets, the ranch and what's down at Skyway 36, other things that are handy in terms of air traffic here in Osage County. So we haven't really nailed down exactly how to proceed. We're still in the getting acquainted stage, and we're happy to keep Congress apprised of what we're talking about. We haven't identified any specific resources that would require congressional action at this point, but I think that's why we're continuing to talk, continuing to see what the needs are of industry, and hopefully our relationship with Mr. Shannon will reveal the needs of particular companies and particular needs that we can then address one at a time with thought and care.
Okay, thank you, Chair. If I could respond, okay, that's kind of what I was wanting to know. Is like, what? Thank you for the presentation, Mr. Shannon. I was just curious as to, you know, were we far ahead enough that you're notifying the committee that, you know, we've got an agreement in place and that would increase our lease revenue and things of that nature? Or was there a budget involved or an appropriation request? I was just wondering at what stage that we're in right now. But
this is a courtesy introduction by executive so that you know who we're working with and how we're who we're working with and what we're trying to accomplish, which is work in progress. And it's
okay. Well, thank you, and I hope you guys enjoy your visit to the reservation, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Okay, well thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, everybody. I've really enjoyed the chance to meet you all virtually and to share our vision and what we're offering, and finding ways to continue this conversation and, you know, together in the future.
Thank you. Are there any other members of Congress that have any questions? All right, if not, then we are going to move on to the next agenda item.
Brandy,
who's your question for, Brandy?
I just had a quick comment, that's it.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to thank President, pardon me, Assistant Chief for the courtesy of this information, and look forward to further communications. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right, the next item on our agenda is the discussion of the 2021 annual plan. The chair will entertain a motion to enter executive session for confidential and proprietary gaming matters.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
No opposed. Motion carries. We are now entering executive session.
Chair, we have an unidentified caller on the line. Could they please identify themselves?
Is that caller 4?
Yes, ma'am.
I see Trey Gill, Terry Mason Moore, RJ Walker, Kim Pearson, Pam Shaw, Jordan Frazier, Joe Tillman.